for Robert tonight, which now I kind of know how we'd feel like if you was a baseball player and had to pinch hit for Babe Ruth, you know. I was trying to remember if I've ever preached from the pulpit. I don't think I have. If I did, it was when I was a younger man. So this is a special Father's Day for me. My dad has always dreamed. That one of his sons would follow his footsteps. Well, it took me 57 years, but I did it. I'm going to do it. My daughter's here, Christy, Bo, and Faith and Hope, my granddaughters. Trey would be here, my grandson, but he's in camp right now. And I've got Uncle Johnny and Aunt Sandra and other visitors here, and it just means so much to me. And I thank y'all for being here. Oh, there's a clock up here. Don't work. That's okay. Ken said he would cut the microphone off if I got long-winded, so. Now, I wanted to explain something about this shirt that I'm wearing right quick before I get started. I iron my own clothes, which that may, some of you ladies will probably understand it, but normally when I iron this shirt, I usually wear a jacket with it. So this shirt, I would normally iron right here, this section. I wouldn't iron the sleeves because I think most of these ladies can tell you that's the hard part, is the long sleeves. Am I right, ladies? That's the hard part. So I would just iron this part, put a jacket on, and then sweat all day long because I couldn't take my jacket off. So I was ironing this shirt, and I was only going to wear that part. Then I remembered that a few weeks ago that Melvis told Robert not to wear a coat when he's preaching on Sunday night. And Robert hadn't done it then, and I thought, well, if Melvis scared Robert that bad, I better not take a chance tonight because I won't want to make him mad. Turn your Bibles again to Joshua chapter 24 and verse 15. Now that's the same text that Robert used this morning, and I thought, oh boy, I'm in trouble. But Robert had an excellent sermon this morning. And one wonderful thing about the Bible is you can read a verse in the Bible and there's several lessons there for us. So Joshua 24 and 15 says, "And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood or the gods of the Amorites, in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." You say life is about choices. God gives us free will to make decisions in our life. It is incumbent upon us to make those the right choice. As we can see here, Joshua made the right choice. He said, "As for me and my house, we will Serve the Lord. Now every morning, when I wake up, I have a scar that runs about half of the circumference of my body. And it follows my rib cage. I see this scar every day. And it always reminds me of two things. It reminds me of a time when I didn't make the right choices. And that scar is the consequence. But it also reminds me now that every day I need to make the right choices. I need to make the choice that God would have, that God would want me to choose. My choices need to be based on the Bible. My choices need to lead me in the right direction because I want to go to heaven. But I didn't always do that. And that scar reminds me too that if I'm not careful about my choices, I paid the price, I paid the consequence for my bad choices. My daughter is here. I have three other daughters, three other kids I have that I raised. And I tend to say, well, I raised them by myself, but really I didn't. But I was the only parent in the home. My daughter will tell you that she loves her daddy, and she does. My kids will tell you that I was a good daddy. And a lot of times I was. But my bad choice was alcohol. See, alcohol is why I have this scar, because I had to have my old diseased liver taken out and a new one put in. And because I chose alcohol, I suffered physically. But I not only suffered physically, I suffered spiritually. See, the devil appeared to Eve in the form of a snake. The devil appeared to me in a bottle of beer. And it lied to me. It lied to me all the time, every day. It would tell me that I'm not worthy to be your daddy. That bottle of beer would tell me that. Here you've got these kids, and you work 60 hours a week, and you're trying your best to be mama and daddy, and you need me. That's what the devil would tell me. You need me. And I believed it. The choices I made were based on that lie. So eventually, God slapped me around pretty hard. He brought me to my knees. Had a foot in the grave. And I had to learn. I had to change my ways. I had to, if I wanted to live physically, I had to stop what I was doing. And I had to change my ways. I had to make better choices. But I also learned that it was more important that I make better choices for my spiritual life. It was more important than the ones that I make for my physical life. And so God used that my bad choices to work His will in my life. That's what that scar means to me. Now, recent events in our country, have been very hard on us. We have tragedies all over. We have 50 killed at a nightclub in Orlando. We've had two drunk driving incidents here recently that have just hurt me to my soul, where five people have been killed, and three of them children. The death of a child is something hard to understand. But it hurts me even more when people say, why does God let this happen? Can't God stop this? When we let these tragedies shake us so much that we question God, that tragedy is magnified 100 times over. It was choices that led to these tragedies. And we as Christians need to know that. We cannot let it shake our faith in God. The gunman made a choice to align himself with ISIS and walk in and kill those people. 50 people. Those drunk drivers made a choice to drink and use drugs and get behind a wheel and drive. That was their choice. That wasn't God's choice. God didn't cause that. And concerning the tragedy in Orlando, if we think that it's any less of a tragedy because of it happened at a gay pride event, you're wrong. In fact, it makes it more of a tragedy that 50 lives were lost that could have been saved, could have been led to Christ, that should have had the opportunities to repent of their sinful lifestyle. And as Christians, that should make us mourn deeper. I've heard people say that that's God's retribution. I don't know. That ain't for me to judge. That ain't for anybody to judge. My friend Brother Sims, 103 years old, says all the time that as Christians, we better be careful when we play God. But then people say, why does God let this happen? It wasn't God that let it happen. It was by choices. These men made bad choices, and the other people paid. And that's hard for us to understand. It's hard for us to understand things like that. As Christians, it's hard for us to understand when we talk about God being sovereign of all things. That is, we tend to think we understand. And we try to understand. But it's hard to understand about the providence of God, the divine providence of God. And this is why that we have a lack of understanding about the sovereignty of God and the divine providence of God. This is what leads us to have our faith shaken by tragedies like this. Because we don't understand. We don't understand that God says God is sovereign over everything. God is sovereign over everything, and we believe that. We say we believe that. God says that He knows when the sparrow falls to the ground. He says He knows every hair. God knows every hair on your head. As I look out over this audience, that's not too hard to understand for some of you. How do we comprehend that? Proverbs 3 and 5 tells us to trust the Lord with all your heart and lean not unto your own understanding. Lean not on your own understanding. Why is it dangerous for us to lean on our own understanding? Isaiah 55 verses 8 and 9, God says that my ways are not your ways, and my wisdom, my thoughts, is not your thoughts. For my ways are as higher than your ways, than the, from the heavens to the earth, and so are my thoughts. So then we say we understand that God is sovereign, and we trust Him with all our hearts. But yet we as Christians spend too much time trying to figure out, how does God know when that sparrow falls? Or how does He know how many hairs on my head? My friends, that ain't for us to worry about. That's a lack of faith. That's simply a lack of faith. We need to understand that there's some things that we just cannot understand. We are not to understand, never going to understand. And that's not a slap in anybody's face. There's never been a person alive and never will be a person living under this earth that will understand the sovereignty of God fully. I don't. But I believe I've got a pretty good handle knowing now that I need to trust the Lord with all my heart. And I don't need to lean on my own understanding. Because I did that back when I made bad choices. I leaned on my own understanding. We need to understand sometimes that as Christians we're going to suffer tragedies. But we need to understand too that God promises us that if we remain faithful to Him, that these tragedies are nothing compared to the glory of heaven. When you think of the tragedies that you've suffered in your life. And Paul, think of Paul in 2 Corinthians 4 and 17. He says these tribulations that he suffered are just momentary and nothing compared to when he stands before his God. We seem to have a problem today in that as Christians, we want to say that we love God. I love God. We say that. But we expect God to hand us everything on a silver platter. And we forget the commandment that Jesus says, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. And we forget that. So the first thing we do is we say we love God, but we don't want to do anything to show that we love God. We don't want to follow His commandments. Then the first time in our lives when we have a tragedy, what's the first thing we want to do? God, why did you let this happen to me? Too many times the people in our society want to blame God for the bad choices that they make. They want to hold God accountable for their sins. They want to say, God, why? Why did you do this to me? It wasn't God that did it to you. It was you that did it to you. It was your attitude. And we have a lot of that going on today, especially concerning these tragedies that I was talking about. And people say, why does this have to happen? But it's hard for us to understand the divine providence of God. I don't know if anybody could fully define what the divine providence of God is. The only way I can think of to describe it would be that it's the way that God, in His superior wisdom and love, governs our universe. That's really the only way with words I can think of to describe it. We know that God is sovereign over everything. The Bible tells us that. He's sovereign over nature. He's sovereign over our lives. He's sovereign over our successes and our failures. But it's hard to understand that if He's sovereign over everything, why does He let some things happen? I get that. I've been there. When I was sick, I asked, God, why are you letting me suffer like this? I'm trying my best. I think it's important for us to know that because of divine providence, that God uses tragedies in our life to work His will. I believe that. Even natural tragedies. This community here in Tanner would be evidence of that, I believe. It was 2011, a tornado come through here and just ripped the town apart. But because of that tragedy, that tornado had barely left before the community of Tanner came together in support of one another. There was a unity there that wasn't there before. And everybody helped everybody, regardless of skin color or religious beliefs or possibly even sexual orientation. And there still seems to be a unity in this community that there wasn't before that tornado. Robert talked a few weeks ago about how the reputation of this church has been one of the most benevolent churches that he's ever been around. And our reputation in this part of the country is that we're benevolent. And I believe it's always been that way, but perhaps it's even more so now because of that tornado. And communities all over North Alabama on that day came together. And I believe they're stronger communities now than they was before it happened. Yeah, that tornado, we don't understand why lives had to be lost, property had to be destroyed. We don't understand. But people are closer together now than they were before. But there's other tragedies that are hard for us to explain, personal tragedies. The little two-year-old boy that got ripped from his daddy's hand in Orlando is one that's hard for us to understand. And y'all might be thinking that I'm crazy to thinking that this can work for good for God. The first night that I read that, I thought about how terrible it must have been for that father to try to wrestle that 2-year-old boy from that alligator. I couldn't imagine that. I went to sleep that night thinking about it. I thought about a time that when my little girl, we lived in Florida, and I had decided that we weren't going to swim in the Gulf anymore because of the danger of jellyfish. Everybody said, oh, very unlikely that a jellyfish will come in that far inlet. Won't come up in the bay. So we went swimming in the bay. And I'm just a few steps away from my daughter. And I feel a jelly-like substance in the water. And I've turned to tell everybody we probably need to get out of the water. And before I could do that, my daughter hollered and jumped out of the water. She had been stung by a Portuguese man of war. She spent about 2 days in the hospital. For a long time, she had the whelps of that thing, purple whelps of where that thing got her. And Daddy was ate up with guilt that I was right there, but I couldn't stop my daughter from getting hurt. I couldn't imagine the guilt that and the grief and the anguish that this mother and father felt. So people may be wondering, why in the world, Rick, how in the world could you say that an event like this could work together for the will of God? Well, consider this, that now that couple, that mother and father, they now have a choice. Now more than ever in their lives, they need God. But they're at a crossroads now. And they've got a very important choice to make. Are they going to let this tragedy tear them away from God? Or are they going to hold on to God at this time that they need Him the most in their lives? And think about this, that if they make that choice, when the people around them have tragedies, and they look to this couple to see that they held on to God in the face of an unimaginable grief. Just think the influence that they would have on others and the statement they would make on how that when you suffer a tragedy, it is much more important to hang on to God. And the opportunities that they would have to influence other people and bring them to God instead of tearing them apart. That's what I mean. That's what I'm talking about. To bury a child at any age is a terrible thing. I pray I never have to. But we have members of this congregation that have done that. We have 3 sets of parents in my family that have done that. I don't know why Chad died. I don't know why Anthony died. I don't know why Andrew died. I don't know that. But I know my sister. That I love. My sister is an example of how that at a time like this, you hold on to God. Took her a little while. But now she's a source of strength for me. For me knowing what she'd been through. And she made the choice to turn to God and not turn away. And she's an influence for our family. My Uncle Johnny and my Aunt Sandra's here. A couple of Saturdays ago, we had a... My voice is cracking like I'm 16 years old. We had a family reunion at their house. The Green family reunion, which includes the Greens, Davis, and Chandlers. There were 91 people there. Aunts and uncles and cousins that I haven't seen in years and years and years. There was 91 of us there. See, my family, when God said be fruitful and multiply, we took it serious. We didn't mess around. But my Uncle Johnny, before we ate, said the most beautiful prayer. Being thankful to God. Thankful for his family. Thankful for everything that he has. And I thought about this. I thought about Uncle Johnny and Aunt Sandra when I was thinking about this. Because he's thankful. They're thankful for what they have. They've got two other sons that are just have this wonderful families. Very strong. The reason they're strong is because of the example in the face of tragedy of their mother and father. They've lost so much. They've lost more than a son. I believe this was the third house that you've had to rebuild from hit from tornadoes. Been hit with a tornado twice and lost a son. But my Uncle Johnny, because he's faithful and he believes in God and he's held on to God in all this tragedy, prayed one of the most beautiful prayers. And it means so much to me. When I think of the things I've been through, I can look at my Uncle Johnny and my Aunt Sandra. And I know what I need to do from their example. So God used that tragedy. God didn't cause Chad or Anthony to die. But God used that and these parents to create a stronger faith. And I love y'all. And I didn't know if I could get to that part without crying. So sometimes tragedies happen and we do it for no reason that we can figure out. And these examples are for us to realize that if, when we face hard times and when we struggle, that we cannot survive these struggles if we turn our back on God. At these times in our life, we need to hold on to God with everything that we have. And not question why. But as my Uncle Johnny did, said, thank you, God. Thank you for what I have. In my personal situation, though, I believe that God used my sins to work his will in my life. I believe that with all my heart. I suffered an illness. And at times I said, why are you doing this to me, God? But the truth was, I did it to myself. It was my sins that God used to work his will in my life. God hates sin. So it may be strange for me to say that God used sin. God hates sin. God cannot be a part of sin. God will turn his back on sin. When his own son took all the sin of the world on the cross, God turned his face from Jesus. But yet I believe with all my heart that God allowed me and allows you the free will of making your choices. And when those choices, when you turn to sin, that God can and does use sin in our lives to work His will. I didn't think I would ever be standing in front of a congregation preaching the gospel. But because of my sin and because of my illness, God used that to bring me to this point in my life. We also have examples in the Bible where that has happened. If you turn to Acts chapter 9, you'll read about the conversion of Saul. And then I'm just about through, y'all. Acts chapter 9, we find the conversion of Saul. Saul persecuted Christians. He considered it his job. He done it with gusto. In Acts chapter 26, he said he was mad at these Christians. And he done everything that he could do to bring them to what he thought was justice. To have them tried and put to death for blasphemy. He didn't just have an effect on whatever area he was at, just his neighborhood. He pursued Christians into other cities to bring them back, to persecute them. But yet we know all along that God had a plan for Saul. God had a plan for him. And that plan for him, God's plan for him was for him to preach the gospel to the Gentiles and to the children of Israel and to kings. Mainly to the Gentiles. Good thing for us, huh? Good thing for us. But in Acts chapter 9, we see that in verse 5, after Paul is asking, Jesus is asking, "Saul, Saul, why you persecute thou me?" And Paul said, and he said, "Who art thou, Lord?" And the Lord said, "I am Jesus whom thou persecutest. It is hard for thee to kick against the pricks." That's an amazing statement to me. Jesus said, "Is it hard for thee to kick against the pricks?" Some translations say, "Kick against the goads." So what is the goads? What is the pricks? The pricks were simply a long stick with a sharp metal point on the end, and it's what they used that if an ox, they were trying to herd oxen, if it got out of line, they simply poked them back in the line. So Jesus asked him, "Is it hard for you to kick against the pricks?" Why would Jesus ask him such a thing? We know that Saul, at this time, was a chosen vessel of God. We know that Saul had heard the preachings of Jesus Christ. We know that. He consented to the stoning of Stephen. We know that he knew who Jesus Christ was. He was exposed to the teachings. Possibly he'd seen some of the miracles that the apostles worked. But yet his response, instead of following Jesus, his response was to kick against the goads. In other words, he wasn't going to follow that path. He wasn't going to do it till God interceded and sent Jesus. That's how it was accomplished. But even if he hadn't have, Jesus is asking him this, why is it hard? Because the gospel of Jesus Christ was going to spread with him or without him. And it worked. You know how it worked? I know it worked. Because later on in the Bible we can read letters that Paul wrote to Romans and Galatians and Ephesians and other places. And right here on Sunday night, June 19th, on Father's Day, we still meet here on Sundays at Tanner, Alabama. So it worked. It worked. But what about the Christians that were put to death? What about the Christians that suffered at the hands of Saul? Don't you know, too, that they suffered great tragedies? That they buried sons and daughters and relatives. Yet instead of turning away at a time when it would have been so easy for them too, they held on to God. And as a result, here we are today. And you know, I just thought, you know what? That'd be a pretty good sermon for next time, kicking against the goads. That's probably a subject for another time, because don't we do that too? Don't we do that too? If we have the Bible in front of us to guide us and guard us and protect us, and yet we want to go off and do our own thing. We do that too. So in closing, I want us to think back to Joshua 24 and